Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to another Words, Women and Wisdom radio show streaming live from Dallas in Texas. PBS Radio used to be in California and now they're in Dallas. I'm Yvonne Neal Silva. I'm your host streaming live as we wrapped up just now the Calgary Stampede. So I'm in Calgary, Canada, Alberta. It's 10 days of crazy partying. If it's not in your calendar for next year, you want to mark that down. It's an amazing time of radio, rodeos, concerts, chuckwagon races, incredible artists, and it's just a whole lot of fun along with a lot of pancake breakfasts. So that's Calgary, Alberta, at the base of the Rocky Mountains where I am. You can tell from my accent, I'm not born in Canada, originally born in London, England. Excuse me. And today I am delighted to be joined by my guest, Laurie Shaw Grey Eyes. Hello, Laurie. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for the invite, Yvonne. And Calgary Stampede was very much fun this year. You want to go to the Indian horse races. They're amazing.
Yes, and they have some beautiful hoop dancers and really celebrate the Indigenous culture, which I know is going to be a big part of our conversation today as we talk about healing as one nation through truth and reconciliation. Now, you may be aware that we just had one day celebration in June, but we're also going to be having another celebration later on this year, we have National Indigenous Peoples Day. We also now, coming up in September on the 30th, have a very important day that I want us all to be very mindful of and put in our calendars to be doing something special that day to honor our history as Canadians and what's actually happened in the past, because it's National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. And Laurie's going to be diving deeply into this topic today. So Laurie, by way of an introduction, I've known Laurie for, at least 10 years, a very, very powerful healer and spirit talker. So she's a proud member of the Muskeg Lake Cree Nation, which is actually in the Saskatoon area, just north of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. She's committed to supporting the healing of her people, and she's going to talk a lot about what that means, the Indigenous people in Canada. She's a traditional healer. She's also a teacher, but not by trade, and spirit talker. She works very closely with her band and her people to assist with the healing of her elders, especially those who attended residential school. Just a quick plug, if you haven't ever had the opportunity to attend the University of Alberta Indigenous Peoples Canada course, I highly recommend it. You can take it for free. It's a 3-month-long course. And if you want to get your certificate, you can actually get that for, I think it's around $60, $65. Well, well worth taking, as it really gave some incredible insights. I was both numb at some point reading through what I heard. I was shocked. I was horrified. And I also deeply respect and celebrate the history that the Indigenous people of Canada bring to our culture and to this land, and that we must not forget, and yet we can move forward. So she's worked with a partner in the last little while to create an amazing song called The Path Back to Who We Were. Now, I'm going to let her talk more about it and how it came about, but it's really about telling the story of residential school survivors and looking at the importance of their strength and resilience to really see how can we get back to who these people were and really honor and respect that before they got taken away. And many of you listening, if you're in my community that's across North America or other places in the world, you may not even be familiar with the history of residential schools. It wasn't on the agenda when I took my citizenship exam, just saying. It's really come to light more recently that there are now, through the use of ground radar, some tragedies that are being surfaced and really putting the spotlight on not just what happened, but what can we do going forward. So this song is going to be available on Spotify prior to the end of July. And you're going to hear a snippet from the song later on. And Laurie, I know, is hoping that This is a song that really becomes an anthem for her people and helps with the healing of both the Indigenous and the non-Indigenous peoples, particularly in Canada, on this very important path to truth and reconciliation. Personally, during the day, she's not only doing this, she's got a huge agenda. She also works with Fortune 500 companies in Alberta in the cybersecurity and IT area, and continues to practice that in and around Calgary, as well as her traditional healings. So welcome, Laurie. So glad to have you here. So let's talk a little bit historically about, as you know, my show is really focused on showcasing amazing women, women who've risen from tragedy to triumph and are now out in the world, either in their community or globally, doing amazing work. And I believe that this is very powerful work that needs to happen. So I'm curious to hear a little bit more about the history of why are you taking this on and what actually happened? Because I think there's many people that don't appreciate and understand the impact of residential schools.
Yeah, well, I'll tell the longer version of the story. So my mother went to residential school from the time she was 5 until she was 16. She went to Duck Lake in Saskatchewan, which is close to Blaine Lake, which is about an hour north of Saskatoon. She went with her family, her brothers and sisters. So there are 8 of them in total, plus all the cousins. So when I was 4 or 5 years old, I used to go to the res, which is Muskeg Lake, and spent time with my cookum, which is Grandma and Cree. And all my other siblings were quite a bit older than me, and they were in school. And my cookum said to me one day, Laurie, she was the medicine woman for a band, you're going to do something quite profound in your life. And when you do, please remember who you are and where you came from. Mm-hmm. And I'm searching for my whole life to find out what that is. And as an adult, because my mom, when she went to residential school, she didn't learn her language. She didn't learn her traditions, and she didn't carry that on to the children. So my brothers and sisters. So the song basically talks about my mother's journey at residential school, really learning who she was. And all she ever wanted was to get back to who she was before she was taken to residential school, back mm-hmm. to the land, back to her tradition, back to her people, and back to her way of life, because that's all she knew. So the song really talks about the full generational trauma for these residential school survivors, bringing the ones that didn't come home, get them to come home, so whether they're uncovered in the land, and bring them home back to who mm-hmm. they were. And then also transitioning to the next generation, our language, our culture, bring them back to the land and who we were before residential schools, and making us whole again. So it also talks about the non-Indigenous who want to learn about what happened with residential schools and really want to help heal our people, the ones that are eager to really understand. So the song really has a chorus that is very singable and is going to be recognized. There will be eventually drumming added to the song. When you hear it, there will be some jingle in the background, but there will be children singers. The final version will be done, and there'll be children singers in the last two versions of the song. So really, that's the background of the song. I'm very proud of it. It came from a poem that I created for my mother. I met my partner, my best friend, and I told him about, you know, when trauma has had it added in my life, I've created poems. And he said, well, send me one of them. And so I sent it to him. And he said, you know, how do you hear it from a music perspective? So I sent him a little riff. And he said, give me a week. And I'm going to put it together and let me know what you think. So it came back and it became what it is today, which is a beautiful anthem of our people, both for the Indigenous and non-Indigenous. And it will help heal the residential school survivors, the next generation, and keep us whole as one.
Right. So when, just for those who aren't really familiar with the whole residential school element, every Indigenous child of a specific age was required to leave their native band, their family, and it wasn't optional. It was mandatory, and I've heard a variety of different stories of what happened, you know, people coming in the middle of the night and getting scooped up and taken away. But it was not a pleasant experience to be not exactly brainwashed. I don't know if we would call it that, but to literally have the traditions really sort of stripped out of you by being forced to learn a new language, learn new traditions. A lot of it was, by what I've seen and heard, hard labor, right? I mean, it wasn't only sitting at a desk like a regular school and learning things. It was a full-on experience that was, you know, 24/7. And many thousands of children, hundreds, thousands, way too many.
I can give you the background.
Hopefully didn't come home, did they?
So I'll give you the background. So in 1885, there was a rebellion. Yeah. It was called the 1885, it was a fight at Batoche. And it was Louis Riel, who was Métis, basically took a stand against the government. And he took the stand with the Cree in Saskatchewan, 14 chiefs, to basically, you know, get the government to stop taking, you know, the food of the people, the buffalo, you know, and the land away for CP Rail. They were taking, you know, the largest parcels of land on these reserves and giving them to non-Indigenous to work the land. And it was basically the 1885 rebellion at Batoche, where Louis Riel fought against, I think there was almost 5,000 RCMP. And there was under 500 Indigenous, close to 300 that were fighting for the people, whether they were, you know, Cree, Métis, Dene. It was the Indigenous really fighting to get back to who they were. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, in 1896, the residential schools were created. And they were intended to, and it was implemented by Johnny MacDonald and the Queen. And so it was implemented really to take the savage out of us and to really try and, you know, bring us into the white man's way, because they truly believed that that was the right way. That was the way and instill religion, right? So these children were taken 5 years old, all the way to 16, some 17, all across Canada, over 150,000. And out of 150,000, 25% have either died in care of residential school or after because of the trauma that they've gone through alcoholism, you know, self-destruction or drugs. And it's affected not only my mother's generation, my generation, and the next generation. So what I truly believe is the seventh generation principle, which is instilled into the song, is if we heal today these residential school survivors, it'll go three generations back and three generations forward, which is the seventh generation principle. Mm-hmm. That was a philosophy or a prophecy that was created by Sitting Bull in 1800, so 1842, I believe, where he said everybody on Turtle Island, regardless of the Indigenous and non-Indigenous, will come under one sacred tree. And it didn't matter your denomination, your sex, or your religion. We all came together as one. And that time is now. It's seven generations from when the white man came to North America, which is also Turtle Island.
That's so beautiful. I mean, it's a incredibly touching and yet heart-wrenching story. And I remember, I say, listening to some recordings and thinking, wow, how could they have let this go on? And yet that's all, I guess, part of colonialism was happening all around the world and different cultures were being impacted by it. So here at home, I know that because you weren't yourself in residential school, it's really important to honor those people that did have that that experience. But also, as a healer, you're naturally drawn to wanting to make a difference, to make a change. And as a spirit talker, You've got the ability to speak to all of your previous generations and your ancestors. And it's powerful work that you're doing, powerful work. And I love the part about just writing the poem as a poem, and then it ends up getting put to music. So very, very powerful. And I know, and I'll mention this again later on, but I know that with that September 30th date coming up, a lot of companies are looking this year to really step up their truth and reconciliation awareness, to be inviting in. I know that you're doing several talks already. I don't know if you have room to do more, but certainly if you're thinking as you're listening to Laurie speaking, this would be something that would be so impactful for my corporate group, my team, my staff, my town, to hear that you also want to have the song coming into life as well. So please feel free at the end. We'll make sure we share Laurie's contact information, so that you can reach out to her and have a conversation about booking her as a speaker. I'm sure you'd be delighted to be sharing this more broadly, Laurie, right?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And that's the intention of, so the company is gen7path at gmail.com, and gen7path.ca is the website.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was up already, so didn't want to give that away yet. Okay, gen7path.ca. Super powerful work. So tell me a little bit more about your mom and how she was impacted, because she just recently got to hear the song for the first time, right?
So my mom doesn't really talk about residential school. She kind of puts it on a shelf. She'll talk about what she learned sewing, a little bit of French, how she spent time with her cousins, but she won't talk and how religion was really important. Being Catholic is very important to her, and prayer is very important to her and faith. But she will not uncover a lot of what happened at residential school. And what I tell her, you know, Mom, you never got to see your brothers. Your best friends were your cousins, and you didn't have a normal life. That's not a normal life. You never, you know, you weren't given the tools to become a good mother. You weren't raised by your mother and your father. So it's just something that she's put on a shelf and she won't talk about. There's things that happened that are coming to light now. She gave a child up for adoption when she was quite young, and that's coming to light now about how that, you know, what happened at the time. And she's, you know, she's working on forgiveness. She's working on, you know, forgiveness for herself and what happened, but it's been hard. It's been very hard. Mm-hmm. And being Indigenous at that time, and even now, sometimes it's hard. People should recognize you for who you are as an individual, not your skin color, not, you know, and we should, you know, honor our Indigenous, who are our first people of Canada. People don't realize that actually Indigenous, the treaties were way before it became Canada. Canada is 1867. The treaty started in 1842, way before Canada became a country. And the treaties were actually developed, and the Indigenous basically were self-sustaining up until, you know, 1885, which was the Northwest Rebellion, right? Yeah. And that's where it started. For 100 years, residential schools were implemented, 1896 to 1996.
Yeah, it still blows my mind that that went on for such a long, long time. And why did it finally, do you think, actually stop happening? Like, what was it that turned the tide to make people realize how cruel and unnecessary that was? I mean, really.
Most of the ones that closed were in were up north, right? In Nuvik. So, you know, I felt like the integration of the white and the non-Indigenous, or the Indigenous, came together in, you know, outside of residential schools, and it became the norm. Within cities, on the reserves, they were still, you know, segregated, right? Yeah. But I think because of the evolution of the schools and the evolution of Catholic churches, it just became integrated. Mm-hmm. the trauma was always there. The trauma was always there.
Yeah.
Well, to light because of the stories. The stories came to light.
Yeah. Well, I'm so honored that that I'm able to showcase this work, because this is powerful work, super powerful work, Laurie. And I'm so thrilled that you're going to be the one who's spearheading this particular initiative and doing it through song, because it's one thing to, you know, see it up on a billboard somewhere, but it's another to touch people, touch them in the heart through the power of music and the lyrics that are so impactful and meaningful. So I'm hoping that you were able maybe to bring, it might not be the final version, but to bring even an early version. The song has many verses because it's so deep and impactful, but are we able to give the participants, the audience members, a little taste, a couple of verses maybe?
So what you'll recognize in the first verse, when we talk about gray eyes, it's talking about my mother, and it's talking about her wanting to get back to who she was before residential school down the path. So yeah. I'll give you the first verse, and you the very first lyrics, and then when the verse comes, you'll see how powerful it is, because it's really a road that we're going down for the Indigenous and non-Indigenous, getting back to who we were. So I'm going to...
Who's the singer?
So this is Lee Friesen is a good friend of mine, and my partner, and he's the one that actually helped modify the words, helped create the music for the song, and I'm very proud to be in partnership with him and Gen 7 as an organization, and as really a mission to really help the Indigenous and non-Indigenous on the path to reconciliation.
Yeah.
So let's hear the song. Just starting now.
Look into your gray eyes. See them glisten like sun shining on water, our beautiful night sky. Your eyes hold so much history, tell stories, your people, their journey. They come far and grow tired of the long . See the future in the eyes of the next generation. They are born to lead the people, keep us whole. The people won't give up on us, even when the road becomes bloody and tough. Creator will lead the way down the path back to who we were. Down the path back to who we were. Down the path back to who we were.
We don't want to give too much away, but you can hear the power in that verse, right? The people won't give up on us. I mean, powerful, powerful. So thank you. Please pass on our thanks to Lee for his contribution as your partner in putting this song together. And I think it's important also to talk a little bit about, you know, how was that received when it was first delivered publicly at it was at a music festival recently that it got aired first for the public, right?
So first I'm going to say is when he kind of put it together and we collaborated, and the very first time I heard the song, it brought me to tears, because it's my vision of, you know, getting the words out and healing to our people, the Indigenous, non-Indigenous, but in a way that will resonate for both, right?
Right.
Resonate, and there's an understanding of moving forward for their next generation. So I'm going to say when I heard it, I was I was blown away because it was so profound that, you know, it actually came into a song. He's been modifying the song. And we actually brought in an Indigenous singer, Michelle Jolly, who will be doing the final production next week. She's a very strong Indigenous Métis woman from St. Paul. She'll be the lead singer doing the, you know, the main verses of the song. Lee will be, you know, doing co-verses of the song and then coming together and collaborating on the song. We're going to be adding Indigenous drumming to the song, and we'll be adding the children's voices to the song. And there'll be a video which will be partially filmed at Muskeg Lake Cree Nation. It'll be partly animated, and it'll be a lot of dancers. So you're going to see the chicken dancers. You're going to see the jingle dancers on our land. So getting our people back to who we were, along with the elders and the children of Muskeg Lake Cree Nation. So it's going to be very powerful, and it'll be coming out within the next month, the video, which will be on YouTube, and I'll put it on BMO too.
Awesome. I'm so looking forward to that. So as a speaker, what would be overall sort of the length of talks that you would that you would be offering to give around this whole topic of truth and reconciliation?
Well, the first part, probably hour and a half.
Okay.
Probably a minimum of an hour, because we also want to talk about the song. The song will be part of the package, which it's a 5-minute song, but then leading up to it and, you know, and talking about it afterwards is probably, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And then the residual will be the talk about truth and reconciliation and residential school trauma and how can we heal as not the Indigenous and non-Indigenous. Yeah.
So thinking about that important topic, I mean, there is lots to heal, and it's not only being created as solutions from the Indigenous community. I mean, we do have the attention of government, provincial, local, etc. So what are you hoping that will be the first maybe three things that will really move the needle towards the whole reconciliation piece?
Probably the first thing is really getting the song out there and getting people to understand the meaning of the song and healing, starting the healing from the song, and really, really working together collaboratively as the Indigenous and non-Indigenous. That's number one. Number two is doing the forums to actually get the word out about truth and reconciliation. And there is a component from corporate. We're looking for corporate donations for a joint organization that I'm going to be working with, which is Eagle Retreats. Eagle Retreats is owned by David Sherman. It's a good friend of mine. And there'll be truth and reconciliation and healing retreats for Indigenous residential school survivors. So it's either a 4 or 5 day program that really gets to the deep root of the healing and really uncovering, you know, the traumas and really bubbling them up and sending them to the creator, right? This song would be part of it, but what we're looking at corporate donations to be able to get the Indigenous into these sessions to pay for their accommodations or food, and making sure that they have care either before going to these workshops and then post the workshops. That's really important. And donations from the song will actually go to this charitable organization.
Beautiful. So the retreats is one element, and then you mentioned, I think, forums. So is that another piece that you're running?
Yeah, from a corporate perspective, it's so me doing my public speaking, really talking about truth and reconciliation, my story, and then also bringing the song into the story, really getting to understand a level above the certification that we're getting from University of Alberta, University of Calgary, around truth and reconciliation, and also the First Nation University, which is in Regina. Yeah, they have a full, I think, a 12-course certification.
Beautiful. So who typically takes the Regina course?
Corporations will actually come in. You can do one-on-one. I think it's $400 a course. A lot of corporations will bring them in for people, especially a lot of corporations, oil and gas companies, because they work a lot on indigenous land. So it's really understanding and being respectful traditionally to the land and the people when they're coming in to work the land, or basically dig up the land. And get approvals, from the people in order to come on the land. So it's really understanding the traumas that have happened, understanding the people, and really how to engage. How do you engage the Indigenous respectfully? Yeah, and you'll learn all of that, the background, the history, and then the approach.
Well, that's that is so needed. So needed. I mean, the healing part will definitely because you skipped a whole generation, right? It's gonna take a while for that to settle in. Do you have any sense, Laurie, of how many children still grow up inside reservations versus,
Yeah,
because
so
I don't think that you grew up on a reservation, right?
I'll tell you the story. Once my mom got out of residential school, my Muslim, who's my grandpa, his five daughters, he sent them away. He said, "I don't want you on, residential, in on the reserve. I want you to marry outside of our people," and because, at the time he didn't want he wasn't sure if there was going to be any more trauma. So he wanted to protect his girls. So my mother and all my aunts married servicemen. So my dad was in the Air Force, and great man, wonderful man, Alan Shaw, Alan Shaw. And my dad always recognized the Indigenous, respected the Indigenous, and helped the Indigenous from day one. He was very respectful, and he brought us up well. We didn't have a lot, but he brought us up well, and he dealt with a lot of trauma from my mother. Like, my mother wasn't the nicest person at some time, so he went through a lot, right? So all I can say is a lot of it is really understanding what happened. So on our reserve, 2,100 people for Musqueam Lake Cree Nation, almost 400 are on reserve, right? So there's a lot larger reserves, but there's 400 in Saskatoon, another almost 350 in Edmonton, about 50 to 60 in Calgary, and then the rest are dispersed between Prince Albert. There's about 100 there, and then all over North America.
Right. So if I recall the content from the course that I took, when a Indigenous woman left the reservation to marry someone who was non-Indigenous, she lost her status. Is that?
Actually, Bill C-31. So C-31 was implemented, and if you married a non-Indigenous man, you lost your status. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was implemented back in 1993 to actually to bring back the status to the Indigenous woman and her children. Yeah, but they only took it away from the women. They didn't take it away from the men, the Indigenous men that actually married a non-Indigenous.
Yep, that was a piece that made me quite upset at the time that I was looking at that, and I'm thinking, what the heck? Like double standard. I mean, we hear about this in the corporate arena all the time, and we see it in real life with the difference between men and women and how quickly women get promoted or whether they get considered. Even though they've got the credentials, they've got the experience, whereas very often it is a male competitor who's coming up and doesn't have the actual experience, but has the bravado to show that they have potential, whereas the female leader actually has done the work. And yet still there seems to be a bit of an imbalance going on. So that's part of my work, which is working with women entrepreneurs who are seeking to flourish and women leaders. And I'm passionate about this topic, as you are about your topic, because if women in corporations do not speak up, if they don't negotiate fairly for their first, very first job, research data has shown that by the time they retire, they've actually lost up to $500,000, like $500,000 lost just because they didn't ask. So that's why this year I've really put the focus on my own personal experience coming out of last year and deciding that I didn't want to be in a toxic relationship anymore. And this whole question of we get what we tolerate and what are you tolerating surfaced for me. And I did write an article. It's on LinkedIn under my name. If we're not connected yet, reach out and connect with me on LinkedIn and I'll send you the link or direct you to the link. Because when women don't speak up, everyone assumes that it's okay. Well, no, it's not okay. Just because we have been silent, it's not okay. So I'm just gonna say that this work is really, really important. One moment. Sorry, it's so dry here. We're both grabbing water. There we go. So yes, this whole topic of speaking up, that's actually why I put together a new program. So those of you that aren't familiar with my work, this is my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, which launched and hit bestseller overnight about 5 years ago now, actually. Time flies. And it's 40 different words and word concepts to help women to ask for what they want and get it. Not by being aggressive, but by being really assertive and clear and articulating their value. And then cutting out some words that disempower them and adding in some extra words that do create way more powerful conversations to elevate their language. So that's the work that I do with my clients. And a new program bubbled up because of this experience of not tolerating any longer in my own stepping into another layer of my own integrity and putting together this program called My Voice. So as a certified executive coach, that's my training, and human resources professional, putting 6 months of concentrated effort, curating six steps that have had that have made a big difference in some of my other programs and pulling it all together in a way that every letter in the My Voice program actually stands for something. So that's an important piece that I'll be sharing more about as the coming months come on. So talk to me a little bit about the healing work that you do as well and how this so deeply connects with your passion for the whole topic of truth and reconciliation.
So I'm a Reiki master and a traditional healer. So I bring in smudging, I bring in my ancestors through my healing sessions. But when I talk to my elders, I talk to them about residential school. How did it impact them? And the first thing I say to them, let's work on forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness is the first step to healing. Forgive yourself for what you've gone through. Forgive yourself for what maybe you put other people through because of your trauma of residential school and what happened to you at residential school. So again, forgiveness. And a lot of them will they'll be very traumatized because all these memories are coming off the shelf that they've put on the shelf for, you know, many, many years. Could be, you know, 70. Some of them could be 80 years, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's been a very long time. And some of them could be only, you know, 30 years. But again, a lot of them really just want to talk about it because nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to share the trauma, you know, because once they start talking about it, then it's real. Then it really happened. And they put it on the shelf for so long that maybe it was a nightmare and it never really happened when in fact it did. Mm. So I get in there to the deep root. I use my Reiki and traditional healing to bubble those memories up and send them to Creator and really start sending love in there because it's deep-rooted trauma where it should be, you know, love. Love will conquer all, right? It's really getting back to A, listening, B, working on the trauma to get it released, and C, just showering them with love and respect.
Right. So for those listening who are not familiar necessarily with that term of an elder, How does one become an elder in the band?
Indigenous is usually about 65 and older, and their tradition is through their wisdom. So what they've done within their band or in their tradition, some of them could be storytelling. Some of them could be singing. Some of them could be dancing. And some of them could be, you know, educational, what they're bringing into social, from social services aspect, from a teaching perspective. So there's multiple ways that they can be a knowledge keeper, because they're sharing with the next generation. Keep that, you know, the traditions alive. Wakotawan is basically saying that the creator is bringing, it's Mother Nature, it's the land, it's the animals, it's the language, it's the culture, it's the traditions, it's the song, it's the dance. It's all Wakotawan. It's all coming in for our next generation. And as I'm talking, I'm just shaking, because the creator is basically recognizing that this is all coming together. And we've put this energy into the lyrics of the song.
So how do you do that? How do you put the energy into the lyrics of the song?
So anytime that we sing, we basically, we smudge, and we ask the creator to bring his energy into the song, into the singers, into the words. So when every single time this song is going to be sung, it's going to be done in a traditional way, and it'll be prepared in a traditional way. So when it's, you know, sung to whoever the audience is, whether it's online or whether it's face-to-face, it's going to resonate. It's going to resonate. So when it was sung at the North Country Fair about a month ago, it was in a workshop, and it was a small forum. It was probably, there's usually about 5,000 to 7,000 people that go to the North Country Fair, but it was Sunday afternoon. I think there were 300 or 500 in the audience, and it was profound. It was profound. There was people that were crying in the song, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, because it touched them, because it's real. It's real. The words are real. You know, the trauma is starting to bubble up, and the love for the Indigenous and non-Indigenous coming together on that, again, that path to truth and reconciliation.
Right. And this was also recently shared at one of your, I'm not sure if it was an annual general meeting or another gathering. Maybe it was the powwow. So shared with your band as well?
At Muskeg Lake Cree Nation, it was their spring forum. And my family was there, and the song is about my mother. So it's the first time that was actually sung to my family and my mother and my people and my chief and my leadership. And it was quite profound. It was quite profound. They were taken back about, you know, the words and the understanding, but it resonated right to the core of everybody in that specific room, and specifically my mother, because it was about her and her gray eyes and the background of Muskeg Lake.
Right. Beautiful.
She's the oldest elder of Muskeg Lake. So she's at the top of the food chain for our band. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole element of you know, people waking up in general, right? There's more and more people, I think, that are waking up to the concept that you know, we do need to have more less ingredients in our food, more back to nature, more organic, more opportunity to celebrate different plants for healing modalities, for ingredients in different all kinds of different products these days. But just to go back and have the respect for the land. I mean, here in Calgary, we just recently went through a water experience where we were put on water rations, and that was due to a pipe breaking. But I think it really brought home for people that, you know, our resources are precious. And especially when the resources that were part of the natural lifestyle of the Indigenous peoples before colonialism happened, it's really important to listen to the ways of the Indigenous people as you're creating relationships, as you're coming onto the land, to really listen, because these are groups who've worked with this land for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and they know the impact. They don't necessarily need an environmental study to show what the impact is going to do. If you put a dam here, or if you impact the fisheries here, how that's going to ripple down and affect, because we are all one, and everything in nature relies on everything else. So it's powerful. And I'm so thrilled that this song is finally coming to light. I think it was written a little while ago as a poem, but finally it's coming to surface in a song, which is brilliant. How long ago, do you remember how long ago it was you created it?
I probably created it about a couple of years ago, the actual poem.
Yeah.
But I have many poems. Like when I've had trauma in my life, people write. I write poems. When I lost my son, Joseph, I wrote a story and poem. When my dad passed away, I wrote a story and poem, divorce. And I know, my time with my mother is short, so it's important to recognize her and her contributions to, our people and what she's gone through, and really honor her journey, and honor the residential school survivors' journey, and help them heal and bring the children that didn't want to go away from their parents back, because they want to come home. They want to come home to their land. They want to come home to their people. They want to come back to who they were.
That's beautiful, beautiful. Well, I know that you're a busy lady because, working in the IT world, working especially in cybersecurity at a senior level, that in itself has its own challenges with all of the things that happen in modern day technology and how creative some of these hackers can get these days. So thank you for all of the work that you're doing, Laurie, whether that it is for helping to keep our corporations safer and not let the malicious endeavors of smaller groups of people really impact a whole corporation and hold it for ransom, in essence, as well as this more powerful work that really is so connected with who you are as an individual. And the fact that you didn't go through that trauma of being in a residential school, I think really sets the stage for you to appreciate and understand through your interaction and your conversations with your mom, with your family members that did participate in that. I say participate, that's probably not the word, who unfortunately were pulled into it, taken and placed in it. But it gives you more of a balanced perspective, I think, because you can look at it from multiple different angles and look at it from the lens of not necessarily the commercial world, but you're working with some pretty advanced technology in your day job. And then you've got the counterbalance of living and breathing in the beauty of nature and honoring those traditions. I think it's just a beautiful blend, and I can see why you were the chosen one for this song, certainly.
Thank you.
Yeah, powerful. So I want to thank you, Laurie, for coming on the show today. I know that there's some deep healing that needs to happen. Again, can't recommend enough that University of Alberta course. It really opened my eyes. If you are listening to this as another HR practitioner, I mean, I spent 20 years in senior HR roles before the last 15 working as an executive coach. It really gives you a deep appreciation for all elements of diversity. I've particularly chosen to focus my energies around women, and I know that even in the Indigenous cultures as well, there is so much respect for all of the wisdom keepers, but especially for the women in the community. And so, we've got that common linkage as well. So I'm looking forward to hearing more. You said the song will be out before the end of July. And where else can people keep connected with you? Do you just want them to be reaching out through your email? You might get a lot of email, or do you also want them to connect with you through LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, it's under Laurie Shaw in Calgary. I'm probably one of the only Laurie Shaws in Calgary through LinkedIn, and you'll see me. I work for an oil and gas company in cybersecurity. You can actually reach out to gen7path@gmail.com, which is the email address if you're interested in any type of workshops or any type of, you know, events with when this song is launched, because it's gonna be a big hit and there will be very busy. So get in first. And then the last one is gen7path.ca, which is our.
Yeah, well, I hadn't looked at that site, so I'm going to go look up that site afterwards. And if you're listening to the show and saying, wow, you know, there's so much wisdom here. Yes, words, women and wisdom is the common denominator here. Women and wisdom in this session today. My work is really around the art of confident conversations. If you're intrigued to learn more about that, you can actually go to my website, yvonnesilva.com. And there's a tab that says free gift. You can actually get a chapter, a complimentary chapter as my gift for listening to the show today. And that's a PDF chapter of chapter 8. Now, chapter 8 is actually when no words are even required. So it's all about using your energetic presence, how you show up, first impressions, you know, what do you wear to that interview or that important meeting? How do you actually leverage the power of pause? And so there's lots of other things in there that aren't to do with words, but it sure shows how you can increase your power and your leverage and get what you want from life. There's also a complimentary communication tool on my website too that you'll see, which is all about understanding your personality type in less than 90 seconds. So you can communicate much more resonantly and quicker with either family, friends, business partners, potential clients. And that is on my website as well. So please do go and have a look. If you're looking for a speaker on women's topics in particular, there is a tab there for speaker as well. So I hope that you will choose to keep in touch both with Laurie and myself as we start to both step into a new layer of spreading our joy and our passion in our different respective ways to help identify ways that we can help people advance. Laurie with her work with Gen 7, me and my work with women, in particular women entrepreneurs and leaders. So thank you for listening today. And for the next few minutes, don't go anywhere because we're actually going to run the recording, which airs a little bit more about my book, Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. So the launch video is actually going to air right now. So thank you for listening. And I hope that you will tune in to the next version of the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show. Thank you again, Laurie, for joining me.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, The New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.